If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
From coast to coast to coast, you're listening to Terra Informa. Hello, and welcome to the show. I'm Charlotte Thomason, and I'll be your host for the next half hour of Environmental Radio. I would like to begin this episode by acknowledging that Terra Informa is a production of CJSR 88.5 FM, a campus and community recording studio located in Edmonton, Alberta. We are situated here on Treaty 6, the historic and present territory of Cree, Métis, Blackfoot, Dene, and many other First Peoples that live and gather here. We ask you to consider your connection to this land and how you are challenging the colonial systems of oppression in place as part of your treaty obligations. We all have a role to play in the relationship that is treaty. This episode is part one of a two-part mini-series on youth in the climate crisis. If you grew up like me in rural Alberta, you probably don't remember learning about the indisputable fact that humans are perpetuating climate change, or ways in which we could make a difference. I didn't even know a degree in environmental science existed until after I started university. Turns out, it wasn't just me not paying attention, and lack of climate education is a systemic problem. According to research done by Seth Wines and Kimberly Nicholas, climate science education in Alberta falls short, and we are not even close to the worst province. Has the Canadian education system failed us, and is it still failing youth today? The paper published earlier this year by Seth Wines and Kimberly Nicholas analyzes and grades the current curricula in each of the Canadian provinces and territories. I came across this paper while reading an article by The Narwhal, and upon reading the paper, the results were not good. Since education is provincial jurisdiction, 13 provinces and territories in Canada have vastly different curriculum requirements on what students need to know about climate change. Only Saskatchewan teaches that climate change is collectively recognized by experts as an ongoing threat. Manitoba, on the other hand, provided reading materials from climate change denier groups, framing the issue as a polarizing debate among scientists. Most curricula actually encouraged a debate about the science of climate change, despite the fact that climate change is not debatable. All of the 928 peer-reviewed papers the authors looked at all agreed that anthropogenic sources are the main drivers of climate change. Here in Alberta, climate science is only taught in non-mandatory courses, and there is no focus on how we can mitigate climate change. The worst provinces, however, were Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, which basically only have a section on climate and no curriculum focus on the fact that it is human-caused and that it's a threat to ecological and anthropocentric livelihoods. More than half of the provinces and territories did not include any mention of how to mitigate climate change or what needs to change in order to make a difference. To me, this sounds like a failure of the education system in Canada. We are now going to hear Sonik Patel and Elizabeth Dowdell reflect on their own personal schooling experiences and discuss their opinions on gaps in the state of climate education in Canada.
Hi, I'm Sonik Patel.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Dowdell. Terra Informers here having a discussion about our experiences with climate change education.
I guess for context, I was in grade school. I graduated grade 12 in 2014.
And I graduated from grade 12 in 2005.
I was 9 years old when that happened.
So there was a recent article in The Narwhal that commented on Alberta and Canada's climate change curriculum at the secondary school level, so for junior high and high school students. And we thought this was an interesting piece because we're really seeing young people leading this climate movement. But what are they being taught? And how out of date is curriculum? And this got us casting our memories back to, what did we even learn?
When did we become aware of the climate crisis? And at what point did it become something that was a priority to us, to the point where, as Terraformers, we've made our way to this show?
I guess the first question then, Sonic, when did you become aware of climate change? Can you remember?
I remember in high school, in science class, learning the greenhouse gas effect and the way that greenhouse gases can bounce solar radiation. And I think at the time, just getting some basic information about how human-produced greenhouse gases could increase the greenhouse effect. I don't ever recall learning about the scale of the threat of climate change and what that could actually mean beyond just a general global heating. In your experience, were you aware of the greenhouse effect in high school?
I was thinking about this morning and, like, what did I even learn in my high school science classes? And I don't know. I don't remember. I feel like I remember my bio and my chem and my physics, and I feel like I learned more about so many other things. I remember more about the digestive system and, like, dissecting small animals than I do about ever learning about climate and biology, obviously. Chemistry, I feel like all I learned about was acids and bases. Like, this is all I really remember. And physics was all... Okay, I distinctly remember this, like, blue workbook solving equations for, like, cathode and anode rays for, like, an old TV and thinking, wow, this was probably a really cool workbook in 1970, but this is not exciting technology anymore. And this is what I remember from my high school science courses. So, no, like, climate change maybe is a, you know, one of those teacher peers projects where you all present. Someone might have been interested in it, but I can't really recall. I know, like, the greenhouse gases must have been in there somewhere, and, like, the biosphere and the lithosphere and the stratosphere, and, you know. No, but I don't think in my my secondary education that it really came up.
I distinctly remember in grade 10, our science class, having four units, each of the three core sciences, chemistry, physics, and biology, and then climate was the last one. And I remember we ran out of time, so we did all of the climate section in 3 weeks. And I was really upset because it was a big portion of our final. But what I especially find interesting and I suppose somewhat concerning from a curriculum perspective is, regardless of how much climate change makes its way into our science courses, I have no recollection of it ever making its way into our social studies, which is a substantial component, of course, of how we're going to respond to the climate crisis, nor really into the other of the, I guess, main humanity courses of English. We don't really talk about climate communication or how that has worked its way into modern day culture or literature.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, that these places that should be the forums for discussing climate change, like, the science is settled. Why are we looking for climate education in science? Yeah, you should get those foundations, but it really is those humanities courses, your social studies and your English, that you're going to grapple with climate change. And I think there's so much great climate change fiction that tries to imagine, you know, a climate crisis future, like our hothouse Earth future, and is one incredible way to really explore what this means for you know, us as a society. And then, yeah, in our social studies, where it is a major political issue, right? Like, we've got Elections Canada this year saying, oh, climate change is maybe a partisan issue, maybe not. Maybe you have to register as a third party to talk about climate change. So why is that not a part of your social studies curriculum?
Yeah, and for our Alberta listeners, you're probably aware that under the previous NDP government, there was a curriculum review and update that has since been sent back to the drawing board to, I guess, go through that process again with the change in government. And one of the concerns is how much ideology has made its way into the curriculum review. And I do find that interesting from a social studies and science perspective of, you know, climate change is a scientific threat and it does have its basis in significant earth science, but it is also a political issue and it is an economic issue. And so how do we find a way to address it across all of those dimensions that are going to be pivotal for addressing the climate crisis in the future?
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for having confidence in your instructors as well to navigate that, your teachers, right? That some teachers do make that decision to bring climate change into the classroom in as many ways as they can and into curriculum in as many ways as possible. When we talk about ideology in the classroom, what I do remember from my high school science classes is going to a Catholic high school and having a conversation about the continuum of thought between creationism and evolution, and being essentially taught both, and given sort of that caveat that we're not going to tell you what to believe. We're just going to say, here's two ranges of thought and what they mean. That's at least how my biology instructor, my biology teacher back in 2005 dealt with that. But so politics are always in the classroom and has always been in the classroom. So to use that as an excuse to sort of delay a curriculum update when it's so, like, our curriculum in Alberta is so out of date, seems kind of, well, it's very weak and it's very political and mm-hmm. whatever.
The other piece I thought was very interesting from the Narwhal article is the grades that they assign to the curriculums are based off of a curriculum review, but it's not based off of what's actually being taught in classrooms. This is kind of tangential, but I just very distinctly remember one of my social studies teachers coming in like the first month in September and saying, I don't like the curriculum, so here's what I'm going to teach you instead. So I also think we need to be aware of, you know, what we institute as a top-down level policy in terms of curriculum, and also how that actually filters its way into the class and how our teachers are teaching this concept. Because I think that can make a huge difference in what actually gets taught and what actually gets learned.
Like, there's a lot of freedom. Like, you can't control that. You can't control the thousands and thousands and thousands of teachers in every classroom. While you can provide guidelines, like, you really can't control that sort of human behavior.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a greater focus on bringing those, like, teachers to that conversation and having them be engaged with, you know, how do they want to talk about this issue and what do they think is important to learn? You know, we can't dissociate teachers from their own individual biases, and of course that'll happen and that'll come through, and I think you and I and probably everyone else who's been through school has seen pretty substantial examples of teacher biases making their way into what mm-hmm. we learn.
I know a lot about Louis Riel mm-hmm. and the Red River Rebellion, and I know a lot about the French Revolution because those were some passions of my previous instructors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on a similar end, I could tell you a very extensive story about Gabrielo Princip and the assassination of Franz Ferdinand, and I know little to nothing about the Indigenous history of Canada. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely the case where teachers do choose their priorities. You know, I think on some level, having a curriculum and having the kind of testing mechanism that we have of, like, standardized provincial-wide exams at certain places can help maintain a certain level of consistency in a classroom. Yeah, so I think an interesting question is, what do you think we should have learned in school about the climate crisis?
Mm-hmm. Like, what do you not know about climate change? And as, you know, two people who are engaged in environmentalism and who are part of climate change action and have been, you know, doing our own sort of research and investigation for a number of years, what are we still missing? And the answer was kind of a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot of my undergraduate degree has been focused around issues of sustainability, both in earth science and in not earth sciences, space sciences. No. From a scientific perspective, I wish there were, you know, I did learn about the greenhouse effect, but I wish there was more talk about what kind of work the IPCC had done to establish this idea that the climate crisis is occurring. And I wish we had talked more about, you know, what that large-scale carbon cycle is, what these interglacial periods are, and, you know, how we've been using carbon isotopes and C14 and C13 concentrations to try and prove that it is from anthropogenic sources. How we've talked about, you know, how the interglacial periods have occurred and things like orbitals that, you know, establish both the mechanism for natural climate change, but it can also provide a substantial amount of evidence for anthropogenic climate change.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people would consider this to be a political issue and a warping of facts, but I think scientists would have a hard time disproving what has been published in those IPCC reports. And I wouldn't consider really that information to be particularly political. I think that is all fairly established science. And I think that would go a long way towards addressing one of the largest concerns about dealing with the climate crisis, which is that, is it a natural process or has it been affected by humans? And I think in a lot of debates I've seen and participated in, a lot of that comes from a lack of understanding of what kind of science has gone into establishing what we know about the climate crisis. So I'd love to see greater incorporation of those concepts into our science classes.
Yeah, so I would agree completely that mm-hmm. some of those bigger geological processes and that longer-term history, having a good even beginner or amateur grasp on it is something that I think a lot of people are missing, and I would completely agree.
Yeah, and like I definitely think it is important to call out our limitations and to acknowledge, you know, our ice cores only go back this far, or, you know, mm-hmm. we don't actually know what caused this period of change in the past. It could have been this feedback loop, or it could have been this different one. That ambiguity is definitely fair, and like I think in any scientific concept you're going to find some level of uncertainty, but I think that shouldn't prevent us from presenting that information and just mentioning, like, you know, these are the limitations and these are the things that we don't know, and this is how it could affect, you know, what we understand about the climate crisis and what we predict for it. But I still think providing that information is crucial and mm-hmm. is something I really wish I didn't have to go to university and take earth science courses that were outside of my program to learn about. I do think in high school, the way we talk about science is very based in positivism, or this idea that there is a fully structured reality out there. And the purpose of science is to find that one singular reality and understand it.
Yeah, that universal truth mm-hmm. that we can reveal if we test it enough.
So I feel like I've spent a lot of time doing labs where I know how much titrant is supposed to cause a reaction, and the purpose of the lab is to do the experiment and get that correct amount. Mm-hmm. I think it's been highly focused on getting the correct result rather than establishing a rigorous methodology. And I think coming to post-secondary has been a real reversal of those two systems, and it's been about, how do you study something effectively, regardless of what your results are and whether they confirm or deny a hypothesis? Mm-hmm. I also think that leads in really well to the kind of social side of the climate crisis. You know, we've talked about how it's very, very difficult to provide generalized laws or explanations through science. And I think nowhere is that more true than the field of sociology, with both Elizabeth and I are part of and doing our master's in. You know, so much of our social structure is contextual, and it's very difficult to apply rules generally across the human race, because so much of what we do is social and culturally constructed. Mm-hmm. And so I guess what I'd like to see from a climate change perspective in our social sciences and social studies is, I guess, acknowledging some of the challenges with that are going to come with dealing with that kind of crisis, and talking about, you know, concerns about things like free ridership or collective action that, for me, I really learned about in my economics courses, but I think has a greater place at a high school level. I think economics in general deserves a bigger place in high school, but yeah, talking about what are some of the social constraints with dealing with this ultimate, like, global threat, and what are some of the effective ways to try and encourage that kind of collective action, and, you know, what case studies from the past can we take a look at where we've done, I mean, obviously not the same thing, but kind of similar things like the, I forgot what they're called, chlorofluorocarbons, and I guess effects, I mean, not that long ago, to try and reduce those globally to deal with the ozone crisis. Obviously very, very different from what we're going to have to deal with in terms of the climate crisis, but are really interesting examples of not only scientific but social work to deal with major environmental problems at a global scale.
Yeah, so I'm going to completely agree with the importance of digging deeper into some of the environmental policy in social studies and in, say, English classes, maybe some of our stories. Right, some of our young adult fiction are our different sort of stories that we're telling young people, and how they may be relevant or related to the climate crisis. And I think this is deeply important because, like, I think young people are looking for it too. So while we might be in our post-secondary studies, kids in junior high and high school and younger are hearing about climate change. It's on the news every day now, even if it wasn't when we were in high school. And like, they have questions, and this is something that I find really critically missing in most contexts. And so I had an opportunity to do some research with young people and ask them about this experience, and almost all of them remembered hearing about climate change, and it started outside of school. It was something they heard about in their home. And these are young people. These are all teenagers. These are all kids, right? And they're hearing about these things, but they're not getting any education on it, right? It's not until that one elective class, maybe in high school with that one engaged instructor. And there's a lot of fear and a lot of like stress and anxiety that come with getting these kind of terrifying pronouncements daily and not being taught about it and not being engaged in it. And I think that's a real shame, because like, students need that experience. They need that knowledge, right? They need to know how to live within, sort of cope and explore their reality. And it changes regularly. What are the current events? What are the contexts in which students are learning, in which people are going through this sort of education, their standardized, you know, public education, are relevant to what they're learning and to how they see the world and how they shape it for themselves. So it is this like complete disservice to not engage with more of those geopolitical or those social or those human sort of sides of climate change in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that very interesting, especially because I feel like I had a very poor understanding of current events when I was in grade school. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was fairly knowledgeable about things that had happened 100, 200 years ago. And I don't think it's that's bad. I think it is important to know the history of our societies and civilizations. But I do wish there was more connections into what we were dealing with today. And I wish I had a chance to be more informed about those topics. I remember being in high school throughout dealing with the ramifications of the housing market collapse in December of 2007 and throughout 2008 in the United States, and that kind of snowballing itself into things like Occupy Wall Street when I was in high school, and having that really shape, I guess, why I was interested in economics and why I was interested in those topics, because they were so prevalent in the media. And so I think it's very interesting that you bring up that the media is inundated with climate crisis stories these days, and is that shaping the current generation of youth to be more engaged in those issues? And is the education system failing to kind of satiate that demand that that's going to generate? And, you know, I don't think everyone going through high school is going to become passionately engaged in climate action, but I think is one of the reasons for that because they don't know enough about it. And of those that are, you know, is the education system failing to meet their, you know, what they want?
Sort of the key tension in education, from what I have sort of gleaned, or I guess my perspective and what I sort of hear at the post-secondary and at the secondary level, which is, are you learning these things like math and biology or physics or whatever, because it's going to make you a good worker, or are you learning it because it's going to make you a good citizen? So is it for your personal economic benefit, or is it because you're part of a society and you'll need to contribute and be a member of it? And I think that, you know, climate change is an incredible example of where you can explore that, right? Or should you be learning about climate change because you might have a sweet green career out of it? Quite possibly. Does it challenge other existing economic structures or, you know, industries? Sure. That's not the only part of the puzzle. There's also this very real side of how do you be a good citizen and a good member of your society if some of your structures there are also collapsing or being challenged by climate change.
I think there's a lot of merit to just learning things for the sake of knowing them, and they'll find a place to be relevant in your life when that happens. But yeah, that does kind of lead into like the third thing that I wish we focused, or I wish I knew and I learned when I was in high school, and that's the impacts of the climate crisis and what that means for, you know, the province of Alberta, the nation of Canada, and for the global society. as a whole. And I, you know, not only from a natural perspective of, you know, what happens if sea ice entirely melts and doesn't accumulate, and what happens if we lose our thermohaline circulation systems and whatnot, and how that'll affect biodiversity, but
the mechanics of the planet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I did learn a bit about, but not in the context of climate crisis until I came to university, and more courses here are focused on that. And also, like, what's going to happen to our social structure when there are millions of climate refugees that need to be addressed around the world? What's going to happen when all of our most expensive real estate development that we've built along the coast is now incredibly endangered? So those social ramifications as well. And so I think those impacts are also that kind of crucial piece, because we can teach students everything about what climate change is and why it's happening. But I think until we build that bridge between here is the global threat to here is how it affects you and how it affects us, that's the moment where it becomes relevant to deal with.
Speaking back to the importance of our social studies and our English, you know, how do you understand other people? Well, you know, you're told to read books and read fiction and read novels to get in the head of someone else, to have empathy for them, to have understanding, or to have even the ability to consider someone else's lived experience. That's important to climate change. In our social studies, we're taught to think about other geo and political contexts. That's important to climate change. Those are the places where answers to what do we do when the weather and the climate become radically different from what we've ever known and have ever been able to predict. That's going to be people who respond to that. Yeah. Knowing who people are, knowing who your fellow people are, not just locally but globally, is incredibly important, I think.
I can understand where people are coming from when they talk about concerns with introducing climate change further into the curriculum. But I think what we need to remember is that knowledge itself isn't political, but often becomes politicized. And I think there's a lot of benefits to introducing that knowledge and giving people the information they require to be engaged in their society that's dealing with an issue like this. So this has been Sonak Patel.
And Elizabeth Dowdell.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you
next week on Terra Informa.
We won't see you, it's a radio show. Can we win a Grammy?
You may be feeling a little defeated, maybe even angry. Fear not. There's still a second part to this mini-series, a hopeful part. Stay tuned next week to find out how youth are taking the reins on climate action and education, challenging the current system in place. This piece was inspired by a piece written by The Narwhal, an environmental news website. If you have any questions or comments about the show, don't hesitate to send us an email, terra@cjsr.com, tweet us @terrainforma, or check us out on Facebook. If you want to catch up on the latest environmental news, visit our website, terrainforma.ca. Thank you to all of our volunteers for helping out with this week's episode. Terra Informa is entirely volunteer-run, and we survive because of generous donations to our host studio, CJSR 88.5 FM. Consider a donation to your local radio station to keep independent journalism on the air. That's all the time we have for this week's show. I've been your host, Charlotte Thomason, and I hope you catch us next week, right here on Terra Informa.
In 2005.
I was 9 years old when that happened.